Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yeremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebro.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
He's heading east, he's heading east, he's heading, football's heading east. He's heading east, he's heading east, he's heading, football's heading east. He's heading east, he's heading east, he's heading, football's heading.
Guten Tag, Laskema Prosmo to our comprehensive Ukraine Plus Football Euro 2024 preview episode. We'll be covering absolutely everything you need to know about the Ukraine national team ahead of their fourth consecutive appearance at the UEFA competition and the first major tournament that Ukraine has qualified for since Russia's full-scale invasion in 2022. They'll be taking on Romania, Slovakia and Belgium in Group E this time around. Joining us for our special episode are your usual co-hosts, myself and Andrew. Ray will be joining us during the tournament, as well as two good friends of the pod, sports journalists and commentators of Vitaly Volochai and Roman Bebek. Good evening to you, gentlemen.
Hi, guys. Nice to hear you again.
Hello. Nice to hear you and a good opportunity to speak about our team.
Both of our guests will be working for official Ukrainian match broadcaster Magogo during the tournament, whilst Roman is also currently embedded with the team, as well as working as a co-host for UAF's official YouTube channel.
So, Roman, you've been working with the team relatively closely. Can you explain to us a little bit about your role during the Euros with UAF?
Our association would like to be more open for the fans and now try to work with new formats in the national team. And last time they made like a studio with the players and Vlada Zinchenko, whose wife Alexandra Zinchenko was, and made this interview in the Spain before the playoffs games. And now they give me opportunity also work with Vlada, and it's very interesting to try to make something new for me, to see how it was during the Euro, because it's a big event for our country, for football industry, and for me also to try to focus not only the situation in Ukraine and war, and come back to my main role in profession, because before the war all time I worked at football, and for me it's a good chance to have a new experience and see how it worked. For me is need to understand that the head coach would like to work with us, because we don't want to make some problem for the team. We need to help for the team, and during these games before the Euro and during Euro, we with Vlada will be with the team.
Andrew, before we dive into it, what's been Ukraine's history over these previous three tournaments?
It's the 12th year anniversary since Ukraine hosted Euro 2012, co-hosted, of course, with Poland. A long 12 years those have been since, sadly. Obviously, everything that's happened in Donetsk, in Crimea, and obviously the full-scale invasion as well. Andriy Shevchenko was recently talking to The Guardian, saying how that was a moment in history where Ukraine never felt so united, per se. And it was a big part of Ukraine's nation-building process. And during that tournament, Ukraine sadly didn't make out the group, obviously after the ghost goal in Donetsk and everything like that. But Andriy Shevchenko's double at the Olympijski will be long remembered. Then a tournament that I think no one wants to remember, Euro 2016. Ukraine qualified through the playoffs, won zero games, scored zero goals, and literally was one of the worst performances I think we've ever seen from Ukraine side. And then the history makers, you could say, Euro 2020, aka Euro 2021, where Andriy Shevchenko's side reached the quarterfinals. The first time Ukraine had got out of the group stages at Euros and equaled the quarterfinal stage that was set by the World Cup 2006 squad. Of course, you probably can't equate them per such because they're different tournaments, but still history was made. The performances during that campaign weren't that great either, but I think what they showed was that tournament football is very much a results-based business, and you can you can get draws and wins however you want, and somehow even if you finish third you favorably get through to the next round against a side that also underachieved, and then through a last minute winner Artem Dovbyk you get yourself to a quarter final against England. Ukraine did lose 4-0 in that quarter final, and Shevchenko left after that tournament because contracts weren't renewed. But I think this time round, there seems to be a lot more stability. There's no COVID. Of course, there's the war. But from a footballing perspective, I think Ukraine has never looked as healthy from a squad and quality perspective too.
Now, Vitaly, obviously we've had 1 year now under Sergei Aborov and his team. In your eyes, success so far, and what sort of style has he brought in for Sabina?
Well, you know, 1 year ago, when Sergei Aborov was appointed, I personally had some doubts about his workflow, about his skills, because yeah, he had some success with Ferencváros in Hungary, with Alliance, and I was having serious doubts when he was appointed. But Ukraine went through that last year with a great new style. So the first point I wanted to mention is that our national team, Ukrainian national team, is not afraid anymore of big opponents. So last 25 or 30 years of Ukrainian football, we played good football. We had a good team. We had a great forwards like Andriy Shevchenko and Sergei Aborov like 15 years ago. But every time Ukraine played France, England, Spain, or Portugal, we were playing with a low block defense without a ball. We were trying not to lose a ball. We were not risking. And that was hard to watch. That was hard to be a fan of. And if you get some draw versus Portugal, it was a big, big party in Ukraine because, come on, we had a draw with Portugal. Right now, this team, it's a young team. It's a team of players that that are not playing in Ukrainian Premier League. Most of them, yeah. And this team is not afraid an England national team or Italy or Belgium or whatever, or Germany. They're just playing their own football, and this is a big achievement of Sergei Aborov's coaching team. Because I don't know why, if it's more like Sergei Aborov's work, or if it more that Ukrainian footballers are going abroad, and we have a lot of players in Premier League, we have like Pichichi winner, etc., etc. Maybe all of this is a result of the full-scale war, because we have more players playing in Europe and they don't afraid English defenders or Germany or whatever. But last year of this team is a revelation to me, because we're not considered as outsiders in every single game as it was like 6 years ago or 8 years ago in France. Now Ukraine is a team that is a favorite when we're going to play versus Slovakia or versus Romania. And this attacking style of team, this attacking style of football, Sergei Aborov applied to this national team. It should be good. I don't know how to say it. It should be good, you know, high ground for the future. Because all the system, the under-23 team, the Olympic team, under-19 team, trying to play the same way of football. And that's why I think Sergei Aborov and his team changed the Ukrainian national football system once and for all.
I think he's now the best coach in Ukraine in our football, because he's very progressed during the last 5 years. I remember when he started in Dinamo like a head coach, I was close to the team, and I seen what the progress he had now, he has now, and how he's worked, because he's hard worker guy and he's very like his work. To all time see the football, try to progress, try to focus at the game, try to improve his training process, make his coaching team better.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is connected to, well, playing out from the back. There's a lot of goalkeeper Hollywood passing that we've seen in recent matches. Luckily, both the goalkeepers that might be starting for Ukraine are actually quite good at that. They're composed. Ukraine's defense are also quite good at passing as well and building that up from the very back. And then that quick transitional play through the midfield, playing out to the wide players, and then getting it either into Dovbyk or someone running in from behind like a Sudakov or the likes. And I think the players have got a bit of confidence about them. That's something that Dubrov has brought to them to say, listen, guys, even if we're going behind in matches, which Ukraine have done, 4 out of Serhiy Dubrov's 6 competitive wins, Ukraine have come from behind to win. And that was in both playoff matches that Ukraine got through to get to this tournament. And even during qualifying, they only lost 1 game, and that was to Italy at the San Siro. And that was relatively narrow too, 2-1. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the team approaches a competitive tournament, because we know it might be a bit difficult with 3 matches in 2 to 3 days, each coming so quickly. And Ukraine has struggled with that in the past. But I think with the quality that they have, with this experience that this squad has of playing in these top leagues across Europe as well, that it should come in handy.
Now, the squad was officially announced last Friday, and congratulations to the UAF social media channel for their excellent reveal video. The squad announcement was done in a most creative style, and positive signs for the future there.
Україна на Євро. Час оголосити склад.
Анатолій Трубін.
Ви бачили?
Ого!
Андрій Лунін.
Георгій Бущан.
Микола Матвієнко.
Богдан Михайличенко.
Я Забарний.
Олександр Сватов.
Віталій Миколенко.
Олександр Тимчик.
Юхим Конопля.
Валерій Бондар.
Макс Толовєров.
Тарас Степаненко.
Олександр Зубков.
Микола Шапаренко.
Сергій Сидорчук.
Увага, на Євро
відправляється Георгій Судаков.
Володимир Брошко.
Олександр Зінченко.
Руслан Малиновський.
Михайло Мудрик.
Ну і звісно поїде Віктор Циганков.
Віктор Циганков.
Роман Яремчук.
Владислав Банат.
Артем Довбик.
Getting down to the nitty gritty, Vitaly. Happy with the squad?
The squad is pretty full. I have no idea who could fill in to this squad. Everyone who played the last 2 years is in. So we had some questions in Ukraine. We have right now about Serhiy Sidorchuk. Maybe some other player could fill the spot of the third defensive midfielder in expense of Serhiy Sidorchuk. But in general, everybody's healthy, almost healthy. We know about Mykolenko's problem, and everybody who should be is in the squad. So the only question is like Sidorchuk or, for example, Bondarenko or Kryskiv from Shakhtar, and that's all. In general, Vladislav Vanat or Danilo Sikan is also a question. But everybody is in, and we don't have like super, super talented or young guys that are missing. So I'm really happy about the squad and about the announcement. The announcement was, you know, for Ukraine, it's something like super big, because when I see, I've knew, and I know a few persons who are working in new Ukrainian Federation media team, and I was sure that they will create something fun. But I had no idea there's going to be such a good video they produce. So that's a big plus for them. Something is changing inside Ukrainian Federation from the media perspective. And that's even about that. I'm even more happy than about the squad announcement.
Yeah, certainly watched it on repeat for a number of hours when it first came out. But I think with the squad announcement that everyone's just listened to, it's worth chatting a bit about the key players that we can expect from Ukraine this summer. I think the main person or the talisman of the team that, I guess, for the past 18 months, in my opinion, has been Viktor Tsakhnov. He's been integral to qualifying. He got three crucial goals during that qualifying campaign and playoff round as well to ensure that Ukraine got two wins and then catalyzed the victory against Iceland in the final of the playoff as well with his equalizing goal. And he's made that right wing position his own from Andriy Yarmolenko, who has had it for obviously the best part of a decade, 12 years. And as a result of Yarmolenko being relatively old, 34 now, and having quite a number of injuries that have impacted him substantially, Viktor Tsakhnov, prior to this, was always shifted out on the left. And I don't think he's anywhere near as effective as he can be with cutting in and then shooting with his left foot than when he's playing on the right. And that is something that, as a result of Yarmolenko's injuries and the likes, and Tsakhnov's own rise to playing well at Girona in La Liga and making that move away from Dynamo Kyiv, where the last year and a half of his Dynamo Kyiv career was kind of disappointing. It looked like he reached a plateau and he needed somewhere else. And he's done that. He's excelled massively at Girona and for Ukraine. And I think he's going to be a key player, especially in Ukraine's attack. And added to that, obviously his teammate, Artem Dovbyk. Vitaly has already mentioned that he's the Pichichi winner, 24 goals in La Liga in his debut season there, his first season outside of Ukraine proper. He did have a few spells in some other European leagues in the past, but I guess in a top five league, that's no mean feat, especially seeing as for the past decade plus, the only players that have won the Pichichi Award come either from Barcelona or Real Madrid. So he is going to be someone that I think can turn himself from a cult hero, who he currently is for Ukraine after his last minute goal at the last Euros, to a certified Ukrainian legend, you know, alongside the likes of Andriy Shevchenko, Andriy Yarmolenko, etc., if he puts in a performance that can resonate with something that we've seen from his club form. Because he's highly consistent, he scores regularly for his clubs, be it at Dnipro 1, be it at Girona. But he's somehow not been able to fully replicate that for Ukraine in terms of how prolific he is for his clubs. Let's see if that can be enacted in Germany.
It's going to be an interesting tournament for Dovbyk in particular. I think he's going into it now as a marked man. When you go in with a trophy like that, he's going to be high on the watch list for opposing teams.
It's unbelievable. We never had such a good striker from time of Shevchenko, yes, when he was in Serie A, but it was 20, 25 years ago.
Georgie, as I guess we should call him in his European guise, Georgie Sudagov, huge tournament for him as well. It could be his final one whilst representing a Ukrainian club. Thoughts on him, Vitaly, as well, whilst we're talking about Zabani and Mykolenko, as you mentioned earlier, playing in the EPL now. How important will Mykolenko's fitness be for Ukraine going into this tournament?
I think that's one of the biggest questions we have right now, because Mykolenko's health is super important, not because he's just one player. If Mykolenko will not be fit for the first game, the whole system of Ukrainian team will change. Because if we have Mykolenko, there is no questions. The Ukrainian defense is going to be Konoplya, Zabarny, Matviyenko and Mykolenko. From the left side, and Zinchenko and Brashko or Stepanenko are going to play defensive midfielder. If Mykolenko is not going to be fit for the first two games, we're going to see Alexander Zinchenko playing on the left fullback position, inverted to midfielder when Ukraine has ball. Or we're going to see something like we saw against Germany in a friendly game. So with three central backs and with Zinchenko playing the same role, the left fullback converting to midfielder. So we do really need Mykolenko. Mykolenko is one of the most stable players right now. Like we are, if we will dive back like 3 years ago to Ukrainian national team games versus Finland or other teams with a huge amount of mistakes from Mykolenko, he had a bad period in a national team. But right now, playing for one of the best defenses in EPL. Like Everton is, of course, best defense, right? In EPL, as far as I understand. Yes, as far as I remember. And Mykolenko is used to play against players like Bukayo Saka or Mohamed Salah or other players. So this is a player we do really need. And not because of his defensive possibilities, because he's a great player to attack. Of course, in Sondage, Everton, you cannot attack because you're going to be benched or sold or whatever. But in national team, he can do that. He can launch the great first passes like Matvienko or Zabarny. And Zinchenko could play higher on the field. And this is a role I want to see from Zinchenko. So I do really hope that Mykolenko will be fit for the first or at least for the second or the third game. Because that's a pivotal point for Ukrainian national team in this tournament, I think.
And you obviously commentate a lot on the UPL, Vitaly. Give maybe people that don't know much about Sudakov, who's obviously been promoted by the likes of Fabrizio Romano and many others over the past year, what we can expect from him this tournament. Because it's a shop window event for him, really. We know that he is almost definitely going to be leaving Shakhtar, depending how much that ends up being. We don't know. We'll find out, I'm sure, very soon. Obviously, he's one of the first names on the team sheet, I think, for Rebrov because of how good he is on the ball. And he's got that Mudrik connection that seems to be able to unlock the Chelsea player, unlike his own teammates in the Premier League. So what's your take on him, and what can people expect from Sudakov at this tournament?
Well, I try to find the player to compare with Sudakov in Europe, in European national teams. And I have some problems with that. I cannot compare Sudakov to anyone in any European national team that's going to be playing in this Euros. This is, he's a super versatile player. He's a player who can play from the deep. He's a player who can switch the places with Mudrik on the left wing. He can switch with Tsiganko on the right wing. He can be everywhere. And Sudakov in Shakhtar and Sudakov in Ukrainian national team are two different players, I think. Because in Ukrainian national team, a lot of ball movement depends on Sudakov. And we've seen the games versus Bosnia. They've seen the games versus Malta and North Macedonia, where Ukraine was playing without Tsihankov, that Sudakov's role is getting bigger and bigger and bigger in every single game, in every next game. We need more and more and more from Sudakov, and Sudakov is getting more attention from opposition players. And that's why I think Georgi Sudakov, or Georgi Sudakov, whatever, if you want to, we can call him Georgi. He's going to be a playmaker for this team. He's going to be the main hero, the main player for this team. Not Mudrik, not Tsihankov, not Dovbyk. Of course, we all know what those players can do. Dovbyk can score 5 goals, or Tsihankov could have like 4 assists at Euros, but the game will depend on the midfield. And Sudakov and the defensive midfielder, either Brashko or Stepanenko, whatever, those guys will create the Ukrainian style of play because, as Andrew mentioned earlier, the fast flow of the game, the vertical passes, a lot of vertical plays, a lot of speed, a lot of counterattacks. This is the style of Serhii Rebrov. And in this type of game, in those kind of games, we do really need the Sudakov's versatility, Sudakov's speed, and Sudakov's mind because the passes this guy can launch, and the shots he can shot. I don't want to compare him to Foden, like, but his shot is still really, really underappreciated in Europe. He's still undervalued, and I think at this Euro we're gonna see few tries from Sudeko to shot from outside of the box, and I think one or two he will hit. So Georgi Sudakov, I think the main player for Ukraine in this Euro.
And I think it's worth mentioning a few other names in this team. Certainly Ilya Zabarny has been a standout performer out of the Ukrainian representatives in the Premier League this season. A stalwart for Bournemouth, missed just one game, started in all the others and played 90 minutes in all of those, other than just one game that was missed through illness, not even injury. This is his second European Championships, and he's still only 21, and he's expected to be playing and starting every minute of this tournament, just like he did the last one as well. His potential, I think, is still sky high, and he could become one of the best central defenders in the world. And he's got another opportunity to show that this summer, where he's going to be very much the commanding player in that back line, especially with injury concerns to Mykolenko, who has similarly had a good season. And I think there's also a debate for defensive midfield. Taras Stepanenko coming on a bit, coming on a lot, really. 34 now, had a lot of injury concerns over the past year in particular. Volodymyr Brushko ended up coming in to the team for the Euro playoffs as a result of Stepanenko missing them for injury. But it looks like more than likely Stepanenko will start in most of these games. But I still anticipate that Brushko, 22 years old, breakthrough season at Dynamo Kyiv this year, made himself the number six in that side. He is going to be immense in the future, and I expect him to be coming on at a bare minimum if Stepanenko does start for the final 30 minutes of each game, because Stepanenko sadly can't do 90 minutes anymore. And then there's also the debate just in front, Zinchenko or Shaparenko in the middle. And I think that there is a chance that we might be seeing Shaparenko, especially the fact that in the final friendly against Moldova, Shaparenko started in the middle. Maybe something that Rebrov is counting on, potentially. And with injury concerns that we'll talk about slightly later, Mykolenko could miss some matches due to a new injury. And maybe Zinchenko will have to go back into left back, as he did against Moldova, and even in the first friendly against Germany too.
We can go into the goalkeeper debate again, but we've seemed to have been doing it every single episode over the last 12 months. It's a tricky one. Obviously, all three are being given chances in the friendlies. We've seen Bouchan against Poland, and say the other two are all ahead of him in selection. Now, Vitaly, I'm going to come to you. Obviously, goalkeeper, we haven't discussed yet, but even what you've just said, what would be your starting 11 for the game against Romania? And then Andrew, we'll come across to you for yours.
First of all, let's close the debate about goalkeeper's position. Okay, I am tired of Ukrainian Telegram channels like posting news about Carlo Ancelotti's breakfast thoughts or whatever. We're tired of this. We have the starting goalkeeper of Real Madrid playing for Ukraine. Makes no sense, like, to put any other goalkeeper. With all my love to Trubin, I'm a big fan of Trubin, but for now, of course, it's Andriy Lunin, and Andriy Lunin is going to play between the posts for Ukraine, and I'm completely sure about that. Like, Georgi Bushan is actually really important to a team. Georgi Bushan is a fun part of the team. He's a person who is creating the atmosphere in a locker room. He sets up the tone. He chooses a Spotify playlist for national team. So he's really important for this team, but not in the post. Like, I do really love him, but not this Euro. So Lunin gonna be a goalkeeper for Ukraine for the game number one. Mykolenko, Matvienko, Zabarny, and Konoplya is a defensive line. Volodymyr Brushko. I want to see Brushko starting in defensive midfielder role. Near him, Alexander Zinchenko, Georgi Sudakov, Mykhailo Mudryk, Viktor Tsikhankov, attacking trio, and of course, Artem Dovbyk, central midfielder. And that's the squads I want to see in the game. One, two, 3 and next 10 years, to be honest, because that's the best starting 11 we ever had, and I'm completely sure about that. Yeah,
I can't disagree with that, to be honest. I did absolutely love Trubin's performance against Germany, and as much as I feel that it could have some kind of influence on Rebrov, he probably is set in stone that he's going to start Lunin, especially as Lunin played in both of those playoff friendlies, which I guess were key, despite the fact that Trubin played throughout all of qualifying. It's a shame that Ukraine have been calling out for a great goalkeeper for years and to have come at once. But, you know, we will be happy that we've got this selection crisis. I guess it's better than having the opposite.
A bit like London buses, isn't it? They all come along at the same time. For me, anyway, it's been a welcome change, the preparation going into this tournament, compared to 2021, where the squad gathered what it seemed like 6 months beforehand in a Kharkiv golf course where there was a lot of training sessions and breaks and games of golf going on. This time it's been a lot more compact. Andrew, what's been your view of the preparation? Happy with it? Do you think there's been too much, too little?
So in my opinion, I think that it's quite a good way of preparing for the tournament. First of all, the three games coming relatively quickly after one another is going to be a positive just to get Ukraine into that flow. Even though Rebrov has mixed up the starting lineup, there have been three different starting lineups in all three of the friendlies, it still ensures that they've got a bit of that impetus running just ahead of the tournament. And I've done a bit of research, and all I can see is that the only other team that have played three friendlies prior to this campaign is Portugal as well. The others have just played two. And some of them, for example, Romania, which we'll touch on in a bit, they played their last game last Friday. So they've got a whole 10 days before the match against Ukraine to obviously gather their things in order after a relatively disappointing two results in those friendlies. But similarly, it's given Rebrov a lot to work on. And I think he's also understood the depth that he's got available to him. And maybe it's not as deep as he possibly thought going into this campaign. But just touching on what you're talking about from Euro 2020. Yeah, prior to the tournament, I think it was about a month's camp in total before the tournament began. Obviously, there was COVID and all that kind of stuff. But also the UPL was facilitated to end early that season. And then there was all the UPL players were training for like 2 weeks before the foreign players joined up. This time round, it's all more or less together. I think the Ukraine-based players arrived literally the day before and all the others arrived shortly after. So it sort of worked perfectly. And I think that they're all as ready as they can possibly be. And another thing, one thing I've noticed during these games that we're going to touch on in shortly is the fitness levels. Ukraine's fitness levels look a lot better than the opponents they faced against for whatever reason.
Good news. Good news as what you want to hear, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, as you touched on there, Andrew, the friendlies so far, a few concerns in particular. Vitaly, during the Poland game, were you slightly worried about the potential substitutes that Rebrov could be calling on as the tournament gets progressively deeper over the next few weeks?
No, I was not. Come on, that's a friendly game, and we had like Alexander Zubkov playing left wing. So this is a friendly game. You know, after this game, I was watching this game together with my Polish colleagues in Rome. Polish journalists working on athletics European Championship, and they showed me a short clip of Polish national TV interview. Right after, it was like lady asking Robert Lewandowski about, like, she came to him and she asked the question, like, Andriy Shevchenko told before the game that this is the best Ukrainian national team in history. That's strong words for a 47-year-old legend. What do you think, Robert, about this Ukrainian national team? This is the best Ukrainian national team ever? And Lewandowski stared at her and answered, like, did you watch the game? Did you notice the squad of this team? That's not the first squad of Ukrainian national team. So I'm not concerned at all. I switched the game after the halftime. I went to do some work in mixed zone and athletics, and I rewatched the second half. Yeah, some concerns could be. Yeah, of course, in Ukraine, it was a tragedy, as always, because we lost the football game. Come on. And England lost to Iceland, and that happened the same day. And so what? We need to fire Southgate and Rebro. The problem with Valeri Bondar was his with some of his decision. We had it during the season. We have it now. So some players, yeah, the depth of this team could be not the best, could be not the super awesome depth. We still have a big problem on the left wing. If Mykhailo Mudryk gonna get, I don't know, concussion, God forbid, or something like that, on the left wing of our team, we have no one. With Georgi Sudakov gonna play left, or I don't know, Zubko. That's a problem, of course. But those friendlies have nothing to do with the real games we're gonna have like in 10 days. And of course, those players needed some time to get together. And Ukrainian players from UPL. Let's not forget that the train ride from Kiev to the first game like takes 2 days right now. So that's also, you have to minus 2 days from the preparation. That's also a problem. So I'm not concerned at all. I'm in contact with a lot of Ukrainian national team players, and I can confirm what Andrew said, like the fitness level, the tests they're giving, everything else is like at super top levels right now. And that makes no sense because that's the end of the season and it should be a bit lower. But right now, I have no concerns about the fitness. I have no concerns about the injuries, except of Mykolenko. And I have no concerns about the Polish game at all.
During the Moldova game, Mykolenko actually picked up an injury unrelated to his other ankle injury. It turns out that it's actually on the other foot. It's not related to his ankle, but it's a foot injury. And it's something that the doctors will be monitoring over the next few days, because he did an MRT or a quick one in Moldova, and then he's going to be doing another one over the next few days. So it's currently touch and go, because when Mykolenko arrived, he was hobbling a bit when he came to the hotel, but fortunately he was moving independently, so no crutches or anything like that. So fingers crossed that he can recover, maybe in time for Romania, but maybe one of the other games. Could potentially mean that Zinchenko will have to deputise at left back, and Shaparenko most likely in the middle, if Mykolenko is not available. Just to wrap up these friendly matches, Vitaly's already mentioned that the Poland game shouldn't be looked into too deeply. The Germany game was a look into probably a more defensive approach against a Belgium or bigger side, a la Germany or anyone else that we may face in the latter stages of the tournament, if we get there. And then the Moldova game was actually pretty interesting. Less so from an actual match perspective or, I don't know, result or anything like that, but more the fact that the players look to be in a good psychological position. Yaremchuk started. Lebrov gave both his centre-forwards a half each. Yaremchuk scored within 2 minutes in the first half. Dovbyk scored within 5 minutes of coming on at the start of the second half. Dovbyk also got an assist. Sudakov played really well, got two assists and a goal. Tsiankov also scored. Slightly rough 20-minute cameo for Andriy Yaremolenko, who looked really desperate to try and add to his tally to get closer to Shevchenko. But it looks like it might just be beyond him. Who knows, maybe he might come on in the latter stages of matches during the Euros and add to it there and potentially, you know, reach that Shevchenko all-time record, which he needs two to equal. It looks like time may be escaping him. And it's difficult to see whether he will be an asset to this side beyond the Euros this year.
Obviously, Ukraine are going to be facing 11 footballers in these matches. Starting off with Romania, isn't it? And things aren't looking too good there either. And
I think we probably should also take into context just what Vitaly said. These are all friendly, so maybe they don't mean anything. However, drawing 0-0 against Liechtenstein is still, I guess, possibly a national tragedy back in Romania. So they've got problems. A few Romanian followers were DMing me of late, and they said that there's not much optimism in Bucharest over their team, despite their team actually winning their group. It was relatively straightforward, I think. Personally, yes, Ukraine had a tough group with England and Italy, obviously the finalists from the last Euros. But if Ukraine were in Romania's group for qualification, which included the likes of Switzerland, Israel, Belarus, Kosovo, and Andorra, I think Ukraine probably would have won that one as well. So it seems like they've got a few problems. I mentioned already they've got a 10-day gap before they play Ukraine. That might be interesting in itself. The manager's apparently been very secretive about players that are injured and who are carrying knocks and all this kind of stuff being really weird. So maybe they're going to plan, maybe it's all part of a show. They actually drew nil-nil against Liechtenstein to throw Ukraine off and they're going to come out all guns blazing. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to remain confident about that game, regardless of how we know Ukraine somehow struggle a bit against teams that are of a similar level to them. And like to, as Vitaly has already mentioned, perform better against the better sides. So we'll have to wait and see. Same with Belgium. I mean, yes, they had a great qualifying campaign. They score for fun all the time. Lukaku, in particular. If anything, I'd actually probably put Trubin in goal against Belgium just for the basis that Trubin and Lukaku have got a very good rivalry and have done for the for a number of years. It's back to the Shakhtar days when Lukaku couldn't hit a barn door against him when he was playing for Inter. So, you know, maybe some sort of tactics or the likes might come out of that. And also, Dominic Tedesco, he is a very strange manager in terms of the careers he's had. Quite a lot of high-profile jobs, but not actually that many results from any of them. In particular, Shakhtar got him sacked from his last role when they beat him 4-1 when he was RB Leipzig boss. So I don't know what to think about this particular three teams that we're going to be facing, but I think it's very open for Ukraine to actually cause an upset at the very least, especially as Ukraine were top four team going into this. And then obviously we've got Slovakia as well. Where they're on average, I think one of the oldest squads in the tournament, top three or four, and Ukraine are on average top three youngest squads. So that'll be quite interesting.
Slovakia, I believe, are the only pot five team to have got through the qualifiers. And they were in Luxembourg's group. And the game against Luxembourg was kind of the battle for second spot in that group. And watching the game myself, being based here, Luxembourg dominated that game. And it should have been 2 to 3 goals up in the first half if they'd had a striker with a bit more maturity and composure than Gerson Rodriguez up front on the night. So it's having watched Slovakia pretty much on the level with Luxembourg. And Luxembourg were up in Belgium last weekend where they lost 3-0 in the friendly. It was pretty much a reserve team for Luxembourgers. But yeah, they pushed Belgium reasonably well in that game again. So it's, I agree with you. I go into this. I don't know if the word is optimism or a level of expectation, almost, which is always a dangerous thing to have. But when I look at the opponents and I look at the quality of the Ukrainian team, which we've spoken about for many years, especially the younger generation that we're coming through, there is almost a certain sense of expectation. And I'm very looking forward to the game against Belgium, which is the final one in the group. Let's have a look at some of the other aspects of the tournament, though, as well. Because, you know, the great thing about European tournaments, international tournaments, football is just part of it. But, you know, Vitaly, what is Ukraine's main mission in the tournament? What are the expectations in the tournament and the perception amongst the general public about what they want to see?
That's the hardest question, you know. That's a really hardest question because it's like as you just said. I don't know. Is it like optimism or it's like level of expectation? Because optimism is super high. It's like super high because five players in EPL playing and regularly playing, like Artem Dovbyk winning Pichichi, Tsikhanouskaya one of the best players. We have like superstars. We have 24-year-old national team. The oldest player of this team is Zinchenko and Matviyenko. So this is a super bright future. All those players, comparing to three years ago, to Euro 2020 or 2021, this team has like more followership in Ukraine because every one of them became like a superhero for young guys. Because, you know, they are reposting all the stuff about the war. They like talk about the war. And that's why people support Ukrainian players more than it was like ever 5, 7, or 20 years ago. And that's why the expectation is super high. And of course, that's a problem also. And our football players, they know that Ukrainian people expect like not just round of 16. Round of 16 for Ukraine is a normality right now. And that's a good and that's a bad type of behavior of a fan, you know? We expect from Ukraine to be in a quarterfinal at least. And I think that should be like a normal tournament for Ukraine. We should qualify for World Cup. We should be in the top eight of European Championship, every European Championship. But those expectations and those optimism could hurt even more if they're gonna fail. But in general, all we know that the main goal of Ukrainian team is to talk about the war, is to talk with press, and some of the players are doing that on a daily basis, like Oleksandr Zinchenko, who spent his like 3 or 4 days off after the season in Arsenal before joining national team in Ukraine, doing some United 24 meetings and other stuff. And that's why we do understand that that's going to be one of the hardest jobs for Ukrainian footballers, not even on the field, but off the field. We had a huge meeting with Andriy Shevchenko in like 2 weeks ago. And one of the topics was what Ukraine footballers should do in the mixed zone after the game. How should they communicate with press? Should they communicate with some, for example, Russian journalists representing Associated Press or French press or whatever? That could happen. Some provocative question, that could happen. And this is also one of the main goals, because right now I am in Rome. I'm working at the Athletics Championship, also the big event, like 500 members of different press working here, a Ukrainian sportsman, Ukrainian athletes are spending in a mixed zone like half an hour each answering the questions from every journalist from every country. And Ukrainian footballers never had this experience, never. They were playing some away games in Bosnia or Malta or even in England, but that's not the same. Like the game versus England or the game versus even Romania, there's going to be a lot of journalists, there's going to be a lot of attention, and I hope the guys will do their job on a field and will do even more of their job off the field, talking with international press and explaining to them what's happening. And some players like Matviyenko, who's from Crimea, a lot of players can talk and they know what to do. And I hope they will talk about the war and support Ukraine is needing every day and every night.
And now I just want to bring back in Roman, because he's obviously been with the team for the past week and he will be throughout the tournament. And with Vlada Zinchenko, obviously, Alexander Zinchenko's wife, they've been hosting daily live streams about an hour long on the UAF YouTube channel, where they've been chatting to three different players, Dovbyk, Malinovsky and Stepanenko so far, and there'll be plenty more across the tournament. And it's worth finding out, I think, Roman, what exactly is the mood like in camp and how are they feeling ahead of the tournament? Because it is starting imminently now.
I think players also understand that they have a big chance to make a history for Ukraine, because such a good generation and such a good season like today, we don't have a lot of times, really, because we have a lot of players who play in top club in Europe. So I know some dialogue between the players, like, when we will stop, in what part of the Euro, and they understand we need to be like in playoffs, then go next step, next step. And really, if you say, let's make a prediction, I think we need to be like a quarterfinal. It's normal quarterfinal. If you go to semifinal, it's a story, yes. And I think this generation have a chance with this coach in this time, because all we who's Ukrainian understand how we need this positive emotion and our voice for all the world, because after the 2.5 years Ukraine in very difficult situation to fight between the Russia, it's very difficult. All the our country have a big problem with it's very difficult to live in such time, you know, because every day we have a bad news from the other, about the other friends, about other family, about the it's also very difficult mentality. If you're not in the war, when your people at the war, your family, my father, for example, at the war, and it's very difficult to don't see him, to know what how he's live, and every time you don't know what will be tomorrow. And it's also for all the country, it's very difficult to live mentality, yes, because for example, before the war, every year, every 6 months, we go to, for example, for the sea or for the holiday. But the last 2.5 years, we don't go with my family because we understand situation. It's not time to the holiday, you know. And for me, really, this competition, this time when I was with the team and I worked, yes, but for me, it's like a holiday, really, because I see something, another picture, and I spoke with football players, and it gives me energy. And I think two main reason why we at the Euro, like our team, first it's give a positive emotion for the country, for people who like football, because Ukrainian is a football nation, football country. We have a 3 golden ball. It's a very good result. And the second, this national team is the voice of Ukraine during this time, because now we seen in a lot of people don't know that in Ukraine continues the war, because now it's not main news.
You've mentioned that it's been difficult for a lot of people to go on holiday or abroad, and obviously you're in a lucky position with your work to be here.
Yeah.
But obviously there will be a lot of fans and maybe ultras that certainly won't be at this tournament this year, and that will be like your father fighting on the front lines or doing something similar. You are very close to a lot of them. You've interviewed a lot of them. What's their feeling about this tournament, and what's their connection maybe with the team?
All the fans who's now in the Ukrainian army will support Ukrainian football national team and would like to have a positive emotion. So if you represented our country, you need to give the best. And I think it's the main. We don't know what result will be, but country and the fans will need to see that players give all what they have now. And I know a lot of people who's now at the front line and also see a news about the national team, about the European competition. I think it's a big forum. And during the first stage at the group, it's only start. We need to, I think our team need to give something more, make something extra energy to give like a semi-final, I think, because we need to be like good example for all the country, like Croatia, when this generation with Šuker, Boban, and it's a story for this country. And I think our national team have an opportunity to make this. We don't know how it was, but all the fans would like to see this hard work our team.
And it's true that some of them do watch the matches in their bases or near the front lines, don't they?
Yes, it's true. They also have some time to see, maybe not in the live, but highlights, and sometimes live football streams. It's also interesting and need to sometimes to see something else, not only war. Because I seen the photos, I know sometimes they see at this room where controlled the war with screens, and also see, for example, football. It's possible. I've seen these photos.
Thank you for that. Andrew, before we wrap things up, is this Ukraine's best team in history?
Vitaly's already mentioned Robert Lewandowski being asked this by a Polish journalist over in Warsaw the other day. But this was actually asked to Andriy Yarmolenko in a presser prior to it as well. And he actually said that it was. And Lebrov kind of agreed to disagree, saying that his own 2006 era at the moment is still probably the best, based on the World Cup is the best national team tournament in the world. It's the pinnacle of anyone's career beyond the Euros, of course. And so far, this generation hasn't reached that. Hopefully they will in 2026, and then we can have that conversation. But, for example, if Ukraine, okay, we're going to get into real positive optimism thoughts over here. If Ukraine were to make the semifinals of the Euros this year, then I think we could talk about best team in history from a Ukrainian perspective. However, until we see that, I think let's hold it back a bit and enter this tournament with cool heads and not expect Ukraine to be complete world beaters. Just take it as they can. Continue with their mission, which I think is the main thing. But then on top of that, provide that respite and provide that uplift in spirits for everyone back home that will be watching and not be able to travel, and also to promote as much about what's continuing to go on at the hands of Russia in Ukraine to the wider general public and to a lot of people that don't even follow current affairs or know what's going on in Ukraine anymore, because it has moved away in the news cycle.
I think there's no better way to round up this excellent preview of the Euro 2024 tournament. Wherever you're watching it, we hope you enjoy it. Make sure you shout for Ukraine as loud as you can. And to everybody, until then, take care, stay safe, Slava Ukraina, and goodbye for now. Bye-bye. Head in east, 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 head in east